One of the things that surprised me in 2020 was seeing Christians participating in the COVID-19 hysteria. Some even thought it represented a plague from the book of Revelation. Seemingly most of them could not see through the deception of the staged pandemic, and many even cheered on segregation and mandates. As we wrote in our book, The Final Pandemic, the belief that germs from the natural environment or a laboratory are attacking us has led most of the population to go along with lockdowns, civil rights restrictions, unprecedented peacetime censorship, and more vaccines. Apparently, many Christians also believe in contagious germs. Over the years, we have been sent correspondence from those who claim that the Bible supports germ theory and from those who say that it does not. In this video, we'll examine the word and see who is following it correctly. Have a little faith in me. Oh, have a little faith in me. Not what goes into the mouth defiles a man, but what comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man. Matthew 15:11. We were sent a book several years ago titled The Greatest Bible Who Ever Lived by Sergio de Bernardin. As you will see, I don't agree with everything in this book, but Sergio's enthusiasm for wanting to help others, and more importantly, for the word, certainly struck a chord with me. The reason I am using it here is that when I read it, it was the first time I had encountered biblical interpretations being used either for or against germ theory in the modern sense. Additionally, the way the book presents the arguments is typical of the correspondence we have been sent by those who ask if the Bible does support concepts such as viruses and germ theory. Chapter 16 of the book is titled Science in the Bible and opens with, "The Bible might not be a book of science, but it may surprise you to know that every single time a scientific detail is discovered between its covers, it is quite accurate." It moves to example 1 and states, infections. Until the mid-19th century, a staggering number of gravid women were strangely dying soon after pregnancy. Reasons? Unknown. It was brought to light later that before assisting the expectant mothers, pre or post-birth, the doctors had been performing autopsies in adjacent hospital rooms. So what was the cause? It seems, bacteria. The concept of washing hands under running water was practically unknown until recently. Once the practice was officially introduced, the death rate plummeted from a staggering 20% to around 2%. How did they find out? It was in the Bible all along, 3 millennia earlier. He then cites Numbers 19, verses 11 to 12. "He that toucheth the dead body of any man shall be unclean 7 days. He shall purify himself with it on the 3rd day, and on the 7th day he shall be clean. But if he purify not himself the 3rd day, then the 7th day he shall not be clean." So there is plenty to dissect here, and our author is referring to the story of Dr. Ignaz Semmelweis and his discovery of hand washing to reduce the rates of puerperal fever in obstetric units. This is something that I have covered before, so it is time for a little flashback. At this point, it is worth making a little segue into the difference between hygiene and germ theory, because many people conflate the two concepts and are then left with the belief that it is germs causing disease. A classic example that I am sent is the story of Ignaz Semmelweis, an obstetrician working in Vienna in the mid-1800s. By the way, this story is listed on the Wikipedia germ theory page as part of their quote, evidence for the concept. Semmelweis was alarmed by the high rates of puerperal fever when doctors, rather than midwives, got involved in the birthing process. He insisted that doctors start washing their hands between performing autopsies and examining patients, which subsequently resulted in the mortality rate of mothers dropping by 90%. Now, it is clear that no controlled study was performed, and we don't know what other variables were operating between the two clinics being compared. However, the most important point is that no microbes were identified as the causative factor in disease. It was and remains simply presumed to be the case. Semmelweis advised washing the hands with a bleach solution to get rid of the putrid smell following the handling of autopsy tissue. In other words, it was disgusting, diseased, and dead tissue, not the sort of toxic brew that a woman needs inside her. They did not reduce the brew to an independent variable such as a pure culture of a particular bacterial species, and no experiments have shown such cultures to have pathogenic abilities through normal exposure routes. The microbes present in such cases are there to manage and decompose the dead tissue and have no capacity to invade healthy tissue. For example, vaginas are permanently colonized with huge numbers of microbes, including species claimed to be pathogenic. Some of them may proliferate when there is a problem with the underlying tissue or terrain, but they have never been shown to be the causative factor. If they did have such a capacity, why has this never been demonstrated? We know that pure cultures of bacteria have not been shown to be pathogenic unless they are administered to an organism in massive concentrations and via unnatural routes. The definition of hygiene is stated as 1. A science of the establishment and maintenance of health, and 2. Conditions or practices, as of cleanliness, conducive to health. You can see there is no need to bring in alleged pathogens and germ theory when it comes to the concept of hygiene. As one of my major inspirations, Dr. Ulric Williams would say, "Don't fight disease, but practice good health." You can learn more of his wisdom and the fallacies of the war against bugs in the book Terrain Therapy. Cleanliness does not mean sterility or the killing of all microbes. The microbes are vital for our very survival. In fact, eradication of all the microbes in and on your body would result in death shortly after. However, if hygiene is neglected and the condition of the body deteriorates, then they will certainly commence their cleanup. And like many decontamination processes, some of the byproducts may also be toxic. So those of us that have provided refutations of germ theory point out that it was not bacteria per se that was shown to be dangerous, but diseased and rotting biological tissue. The crucial point is that employing hygienic practices for preventing disease does not equate to evidence for contagious germs. With regard to Numbers 19:11, "He that toucheth the dead body of any man shall be unclean 7 days," this does not refer to being unclean with alleged pathogenic germs, but being ceremonially unclean. Another example of ceremonial uncleanliness is stated in Leviticus 12:2. "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, if a woman has conceived and borne a male child, then she shall be unclean 7 days. As in the days of her customary impurity, she shall be unclean." Even germ theory enthusiasts do not usually consider childbirth and menstruation to be infectious, so I doubt they would be calling on this reference for support. Indeed, there are further passages on the concept of unclean contained in other chapters of Leviticus, the book between Exodus and Numbers in the Torah. It largely consists of the instructions that the Lord gave to Moses, and chapter 11 explains clean and unclean food. The first 23 verses of this chapter outline specific foods that should not be eaten, before verse 24 states, "You will make yourselves unclean by these. Whoever touches their carcasses will be unclean till evening." Again, note the different time frames of being, quote, unclean, only until evening in the case of touching a forbidden animal carcass, no matter how long after its death. But potentially someone can still be unclean after 7 days in the case of touching any dead human. This is clearly not even internally consistent with the germ theorist's claims of contagion. Once again, it is obvious that the Bible is referring to the spiritual implications of being unclean. The next example mentioned in the greatest Bible who ever lived is plagues, using the example of the Black Death. The author states, "It is worth noticing that until a few centuries ago, the idea of keeping the sick isolated was foreign even to the scientific community. Yet 3,000 years earlier, the Bible delineated on how to avoid the spreading of germs. Not only infected people had to cover their upper lips with their hand to prevent an airborne diffusion of germs while interacting with others, but also, when the situation took a turn for the worse, they had to go into quarantine. Let's be clear. The Bible makes no reference to, quote, airborne diffusion of germs, or this being a reason to isolate people. That interpretation has been made by those trying to make the scripture fit germ theory. And on the Black Death, you can watch my video, What We Weren't Taught About the Plague, where I dispel the myth that the condition was contagious, as well as reveal the lack of evidence for Yersinia pestis being a pathogen. The book then makes the curious comment that, as far as infection is concerned, the author is using here a terminology that the layperson can recognize without analyzing the causes, i.e. germ theory or terrain theory, etc. This is odd because the author has inferred that pathogenic microbes both exist and are contagious, hence suggesting a belief in germ theory. Nobody on the terrain side would support these notions. What we can say is that plagues are mentioned on multiple occasions in the Bible, particularly in the Old Testament, and they are a consequence of disobedience to God's laws. The author then cites Leviticus 13:46. All the days wherein the plague shall be in him, he shall be defiled. He is unclean. He shall dwell alone. Without the camp shall his habitation be. As per the previous examples, the scripture does not make any mention of contagion in the modern sense. If you have not yet seen it, then please watch my video, The Truth About Contagion, where I explain how the commonly understood definition of the word changed in order to support the germ hypothesis in the 1800s. Going back to Leviticus 13:46, dwelling alone is a form of exile. It is for the individual to go through and is not primarily for the protection of the rest of the community. Others are not at risk of catching anything from someone who is unclean through mere physical proximity, as it is a spiritual uncleanliness. Note, however, that it does not rule out that the afflicted person may harbour a corrupting influence. The other verse cited and claimed to be in support of contagion is Leviticus 15:13. And when he that hath an issue is cleansed on his issue, then he shall number to himself 7 days for his cleansing, and wash his clothes, and bathe his flesh in running water, and shall be clean. Again, this would be a strange recommendation from germ theory advocates who don't usually put washing of clothes and bathing in running water on their interventions wish list. In any case, once again, it is a reference to spiritual uncleanliness as cross-referenced by Leviticus 14:8, which states, "The one being cleansed must wash his clothes, shave off all his hair, and bathe with water. Then he will be ceremonially clean. Afterward, he may enter the camp, but he must remain outside his tent for 7 days." We can also look to Ezekiel 36:25. "I will also sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your impurities and all your idols." Note here that it is pure clean water that is being used, not water containing antibiotics or disinfectants. Other biblical misconceptions about germs are prominent when it comes to leprosy. The site BibleStudyTools.com states that, "In the Old Testament, the cases of leprosy likely involved a kind of infectious skin disease. In the Bible, particularly in the Old Testament, leprosy is mentioned as a severe and contagious skin disease. The book of Leviticus contains detailed instructions on how to identify and manage cases of leprosy within the community." Then links to Leviticus 13 and 14 are provided. However, Leviticus does not state that leprosy is contagious, and it advises that anyone with the condition seeks help from a priest. The priests were apparently not bothered by, quote, catching the condition. Leviticus 13:11 states that it is a chronic skin disease, and the priest shall pronounce them unclean. He is not to isolate them because they are already unclean. Once again, this would be completely at odds with germ theory, which would consider the individual contagious at this time. I'm not going to get into all the scientific details here concerning the supposed cause of leprosy, Mycobacterium leprae. You can read and watch dozens of our other articles, videos, and books that reveal the complete lack of evidence for bacteria being pathogenic. Suffice to say, a 2013 scientific journal publication titled Leprosy, An Update, stated that, "Although the mechanism by which the pathogen is transmitted is poorly understood, we do know that the transmissibility of Mycobacterium leprae is low. Overcrowding and prolonged contact are known risk factors. The possibility that the respiratory tract plays a significant role in transmission has recently been studied." Although the skin has been suggested to be a possible route of transmission, this hypothesis has never been proven. The respiratory tract may provide a point of entry for the bacillus, and aerosol inoculation has been shown to be possible in immunodeficient mice. None of the cited studies in the paper actually demonstrate transmissibility of disease in humans or that Mycobacterium leprae can attack healthy tissue. In other words, despite the claims that leprosy is caused by a bacterium passing between humans, there is no evidence for such a notion in either the Bible or the modern scientific literature. Going back to Leviticus 14 and in regard to leprosy, verse 19 advises that then the priest is to sacrifice the sin offering and make atonement for the one to be cleansed from their uncleanness. This should make it clear that the affliction requires the individual to atone for their transgression against God's law. Note that the afflicted is not being treated with medications in a phony war against microbes. Instead, an acknowledgement must be made that the person needs to correct their ways. Even Christians appear to find it hard to accept that the responsibility for their own health falls on themselves, or in the case of children, on the parents. Many prefer to slip into the allopathic medical paradigm and place the blame on a microbe and/or other supposed factors beyond their control. On my journey of waking up to the deficiencies in that kind of thinking, I discovered the work of Ulrich Williams, a mid-20th century physician and surgeon. Like me, Dr. Williams became a Christian around the time he renounced his allopathic medical practices and found inspiration in the scripture to support naturopathy. My husband Mark and I were so impressed with his words that we republished much of his work in the book Terrain Therapy. It is a realization that we have been created in God's perfect image and everything has already been provided to achieve optimal health. It is through the follies of mankind that we experience disease and suffering. One of the problems amongst so many of the clergy is the deference to the medical industry and what they believe is, quote, science. For example, a pastor said during the COVID era, "This is why coronavirus is scary. It's scary because it makes us look at our own mortality. If you know Jesus, you have no reason to fear that. That being said, my next door neighbor is a virologist, and it's always wise to be thorough in following proper precautions. Be wise." We would not consider it wise to listen to a virologist as their discipline is based on pseudoscience. Along with our colleagues, we have spent years refuting every aspect of the virus model and the fraud that stems from the paradigm. It is thus disappointing to see church leaders putting their faith in the high priests of virological nonsense. There are no viruses in the scripture, and they are but a mental construct created by man in more recent times. The virus model is for the benefit of the medico-pharmaceutical empire and their friends. Increasingly, it has become a tool to control populations through fear-based narratives. Many of the churches were tested during the COVID era, and they failed miserably by participating in the fraud through cancelling worship, enforcing segregation of their congregations, and fueling the fear. Incredibly, many remain ignorant to their sins or claim they had no choice. The good news is that many believers who were shunned or let down by their churches have set up new congregations where the word is honored. They certainly don't believe that the entities that call themselves government have any authority over God or mankind. Christian anarchists, you are welcome here. We must obey God rather than men. Acts 5:29. If you enjoyed this video, please visit supportdrsam.com.